Hello, and welcome to Golden Grenades. Today is a very special episode because Will and I are back on location. We're on safari again, aren't we, Will?
Hey, Kit.
Yep,
we're out and about again. But where are we?
Yeah, where are we indeed? Some of you may remember we did a Northumberland safari last year. And we had a brilliant weekend traveling around.
A two-parter.
We had so much content.
Yeah.
This time, we have come down to Gloucestershire. Yeah, it's going to be really, really exciting. We're here for one very specific bird, which we'll maybe keep
a
secret.
Yeah, we'll keep it secret, but it's a stonker.
It's a beaut.
Yeah.
We're very excited. So, how are you, Will? What have you been up to?
I'm good. Nice to be back. Thanks for picking me up. I've just zoomed in from London.
You seem to have been quite busy since we last met up. You've had a piece exhibited at the SWLA Gallery in London.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, very excited to have that. And to be on the walls with all those amazing wildlife artists was fantastic. And to get a bit of animation in there was pretty cool. It was based on a piece I did, a trip to Italy. So I recorded a lot of found sounds in there when there's a few orioles and nightingales in the background.
A short-toed eagle.
Yeah, so that was great. That was really cool. And then my latest project was took it on myself to do this animated bird guide. So it's called What Bird Is That? An introductory kind of beginner's birding, really, to anyone who's interested, young and old. I've had this in the back of my mind for a long time. It starts with the first episode is let's get outside. The second episode is listen. And then the third one is look. And then I'm about to do the next one, which should come out soon, which is that classic how to tell the difference between swift swallow and house martin. Because, you know, it's tricky when them fellas are zooming about.
Yeah, I've watched them. They're really cool. I love your character, Duck.
It's basically me because I don't want to ever be on camera. Like, but yeah, he's kind of fronts it. Yeah, it's been fun. So yeah, it's called What Bird Is That? An animated bird guide. And also, we've had great success over Christmas with the t-shirts we did together.
So well, yeah, we put out three or four different designs. The jarhead one. We did a waxwing t-shirt.
Wax, because we had the waxwing invasion. Why not?
Yeah, that was good, wasn't it? Or it was good for me. You didn't get so many waxies.
No, I just about got one at the end, yeah.
Then you probably hated me by the end, by me going, just found another flock of waxies.
Yeah, yeah. I found a small gathering in Balham. Anyway, yeah, and we've just got some new ones out now with the ATM.
We have, yeah. So regular listeners to this podcast might have caught up on the last couple of episodes and recently had Emily Joachim talking about owls and ospreys and various things. That was a good chat.
Yeah, that was really nice.
I loved her stories about the 12 osprey chicks in a boot of a car and all of that. But yeah, the episode before that was ATM street artist.
Actually, can I jump in and say that I've just recently been to see Luke and Katie out at Wild Finca, and I saw ATM's fantastic Egyptian vulture in the flesh, and it is stunning.
Yeah, he just did that recently, didn't he? After we recorded for the podcast, he was going out to Wild Finca. And Luke and Katie of Wild Finca have an episode of Golden Grenades back in series one, I believe, as well. So you can hunt that out because that's a nice listen. Not long after they'd arrived there, I think we recorded that one. But yeah, so ATM, he does a thing where he paints on banknotes to highlight the fact that, you know, money is not being put into the right places or money is being taken away from the important things like conservation and protecting biodiversity. And we came up with a tagline of biodiversity before profit, and we've turned that into a t-shirt. So for all you militant conservationists out there, there's a new t-shirt. And just to remind everybody, a 10% donation is made from the sale of every shirt to Wild Justice, so you can be rest assured that that money is being spent wisely by those dudes who do some amazing work.
Yeah, and there's two fantastic designs, a lapwing and a kestrel, and they look really cool. So get out there and grab a couple of those. I guess we'd better get on with this journey, Kit.
Yeah, yeah, I need to concentrate. I've already had the car slam the brakes on for me as I nearly rammed into the back of our surprise guest's car.
Yeah, we are tailing our guest, and he's taking us to a secret location.
Whoa, secret location number one.
Number one.
I think he's got an entire itinerary planned that we are largely in the dark about.
Yeah. So it's all quite exciting and extra. We might even get out to possibly see some nightjar action tonight, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, bit of nightjar, bit of woodcock, And yeah, we're hoping this weekend maybe for wood warblers, tree pipits. You can maybe find me a firecrest and maybe a raptor or two.
You never know. A big chunky raptor. Who knows?
Dun, dun, dun. We are deep in the Forest of Dean, and my entire knowledge of the Forest of Dean is based around EMF.
Unbelievable.
Until now. So we've been invited down by Gareth Jones of Gloucestershire Raptor Monitoring Group, and we're going out with Gareth tomorrow on a very exciting trip that Will and I have been dreaming of for months. But tonight...
Top secret.
But tonight we are doing a little bonus foray to look for some nightjars on the edges of the Forest of Dean. Where exactly are we, Gareth?
So we're just off of War Green Nature Reserve. It's a beautiful evening. The wind has dropped, and at the moment we're in just outside, so we're just having a look for some other birds and seeing what's around.
We've heard a wood warbler, but since we've come tramping through into the woods, it's promptly done one. But there's other stuff around. We're looking for tree pipit and nightjars and woodcock when the light starts to drop a little bit.
But right now it's kind of golden hour, isn't it? And the sun's kissing the trees. It feels like anything could pop out right now, but it's getting close to that kind of nightjar time.
Yeah.
And you never know.
We might get lucky. I don't know if we'll be able to replicate last time we were on safari and we had the nets on our heads and we got the nightjars in Northumberland, but we're hopeful. It looks like a good area that we might...
Yeah, it looks good.
...get some nightjar action.
And we're also currently in boar territory.
Yeah.
We've just nipped over the boar defences. Left a bit of our hair behind on the fence, and we're risking it.
I'd like to see a boar.
Mm. How close? Gareth's seen it pretty close.
Yeah, I think, let's see how it goes tonight. I think we might get a little vision somewhere, maybe a bit later on when it gets a bit darker. Yeah. I'm sure I can get you running at the sound of a boar coming towards you.
And Gareth, do you have your night vision... equipment.
We do, yeah. So we can do a little tour around the roads a bit later and see whether we can see some boar or deer or anything else. Often see tawny owls crossing the road and Fantastic. Everything really.
Nice. And for those of you listening who might know Gareth, you may know what we're here for tomorrow. But yeah. So Will, we're back night jarring. We've heard a bit of cheering.
We have heard some cheering, which I was very excited about.
Got the nets back on our heads?
Nets back on.
Gareth had his own net.
Yeah. Mine's a bit too dark, that's the trouble, I think. I can't see anything. It's definitely dark when that goes down.
It's the three wise men netted. And we've had quite a few woodcock.
Woodcock just went over.
Oh, there you go.
There you are. Woodcock there.
Yeah.
Brilliant timing.
Yeah, nice.
We've had that's five or six now. And yeah, we're heading down to where there was a bit of cheering action.
Nothing in the air yet. We're still hopeful. The night is still young.
Got some lesser spotted humans coming this way as well.
They're going to get a right fright when we realise what we look like.
Focus it, you should be able to see the bird. Have you heard them tawnies when they're really, really angry? They sound like the witches of Eastwick.
Oh, really?
It's really horrible.
So here we are brushing our teeth again.
Oh, yeah.
And Will's brought...
I've got my electro toothbrush. It's very noisy.
You excited for tomorrow?
Certainly bloody am. Also very excited that we got night jars again.
Night jars?
That was bloody great.
Baby Tony?
Baby Tony.
Woodcock?
Plenty of woodcock.
Wood warbler?
Wood warbler. Anything else you'd like me to repeat? Yeah.
Crossbill?
Potential. Crossbill.
We are deep in the Forest of Dean. There's a specific reason why we're here, and that specific reason is...
very exciting. I'm just dragging it out a bit.
We're actually stood underneath a goshawk nest.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, we've been invited by Gareth, chairman of Gloucestershire Raptor Monitoring Group, to come on a ringing session, and it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, and Gareth's with us here.
Yeah, so one of our climbers is just going up now. We have two climbers, one safety climber and one climber that's actually climbing. You also have a ringer in charge, so somehow I've got that responsibility today. So I'm just watching him as he's going up. We're giving him a brief into what to do and what to expect. And yeah, we're in this private estate here. This is a private estate in the Forest of Dean. The nest is about 60 foot, 70 foot up in the air. It's a new nest. This was found this year by me whilst looking for something else. I drove past and I thought, looks like a few sticks. Ran up through the wood and saw that it was a goshawk nest. So it's really good. So this is different places where the adults perch. So often they perch above the nest. They like to glide in. So I've just seen a bit of prey there. So you've got a little bit of a pigeon feather there.
Yeah.
Which has then been predated by a fox because you can see it's been bitten off. But that would be a gosh kill. Right. In the first place. So what we do is the climber will go up, he'll make himself safe, he'll put a pulley on a branch so that we can control the birds coming down, and the birds will come down and then get about ringing them.
Fantastic. Well, he's about quarter way up now, and we'll get back to you when perhaps the chicks are coming down.
Woohoo! So look. Whoa. Oh, corvid leg.
Just found a leg of a crow.
Gareth has just found us another little trinket. Kit is now holding in his palm a corvid's leg.
Now the proud owner of a corvid's leg.
Yeah, you can be proud over the breastbone of a pigeon as well, if you like.
Yeah.
Not so bother for the pigeon breastbone.
No, we'll stick with a leg. Smallish, isn't it?
Do you want it?
Yeah.
No, I don't want it. Yeah. It's cool, though.
Dan the climber is... right up that tree now, and he's a couple of feet off the top of them.
Yeah, he's getting really close to the nest now. We had a goshawk circling as we came in, saw it briefly.
Yeah,
but, Gareth said they tend to stay clear.
She'll be watching us though.
Yeah.
And more importantly, watching Dan as he gets his head over that nest.
Yeah.
Sees what's in there.
Imagine just popping your head over into that nest.
Man, that must be amazing. Must be amazing seeing those chicks when you climb over and seeing what you've got. He's at the nest now. He's about to peep in. Three chicks. Awesome. Dan's reaching into the nest now. We're slightly up a hill, 40 or 50 feet away, so we can get a good view of him up the tree through our binoculars. There's lots of branches that he's having to navigate and be careful not to snap off because the chicks may need that to branch out onto as they get a bit older, but he's got his bag safely tethered to the branch.
He's doing the bag. The bagging is happening.
The bagging. So he's actually in the nest and he's handling the birds and he's putting those in a separate bag and then he's going to put them into a bag to bring them down. And then we'll each have a pet goshawk. No. I can't remember this being this envious of anybody for a long time. I'd love to be him right now, up that tree.
It's okay when it's sunny and not too windy.
Yeah.
When it's raining and windy, then it's not so pleasant.
You can see him so gently picking up that bird there, yeah. He's got one.
It's a first year nest, so you can see some fresh greenery on top, so they keep adding greenery as the season goes on. And, you know, we've had nests that are 20 years old or something, the size of, you wouldn't imagine. Really? Absolutely massive.
You'd imagine a golden eagle
there. Yeah, the climber was saying earlier that I got him to get a camera back from one of the sites, and it was 6 foot across the nest. So wow. You're getting up to a decent size at that stage.
Amazing.
So if this was a peregrine, yeah, it would be trying to kill you.
Okay.
That's good to know.
Yeah?
Yep.
It's just lying there, isn't it? Just so...
Yeah. Mm. Passive.
With that mad eye and those...
Yeah.
Got the claws.
Yeah, that's the peregrine claws and nothing like these.
Yeah.
Not when it comes to females. Reset.
Claw next.
Oh, we've got pine claw, yeah. So one of the measurements we use to tell if it's a male or female,
we're doing the feisty one first.
We know it's a female.
How do you know it's a female then?
Because she's got fat legs.
Fat legs, how rude.
Right.
Right. Hind claw is 21.6.
Okay.
Was that just knowing that she's going to be huge, or is that just...
Obviously females will weigh about 1.5 kilos.
Yeah, so it tells you it's
going
to be a bigger
bird. Males will be about 700. Yeah. So, and they just predate on slightly different things, so the female will...
So the hind claw will be much smaller from male.
Yeah. Yeah, you might be 17, 18 or so, something like that. So the tarsus length, obviously still same bones as us.
90.7 tarsus length.
Tarsus length 90.7. Okay. All right.
Oh, they're sweethearts, aren't they? It's amazing that it's, it's not pecking or biting in or anything.
Are you built on the feathers? Yes. Well, the wing length.
Mum calling from the trees.
Getting excited, might get a flyby of Mama Goshawk. As the babies are below getting ringed.
All looking very healthy too.
Where are you, Mama?
So that was secret goshawk site number one.
Fantastic.
Yeah, 3 healthy chicks successfully ringed by Gareth and his team. Where are we off to now, Gareth?
So we're off to Forestry England site now. In the general area is a place called Flaxley Woods. And so we've got several sites there. Unfortunately, a couple of them have failed this year on chicks or eggs. But this one, touch wood, is still going. We'll see how many there is.
What do you call this site?
So the wood is called Hope. But they used to nest in another place. And so I called this site New Hope.
I'm doing the Superman tune.
That was E.T.
E.T.
Right, keep that on. Right, 1, 2, purse your lips.
A new hope.
Let's hope the site's more successful than your singing.
What I was going to ask, Gareth, obviously there's a high density of goshawk numbers around the Forest of Dean area. How close would one pair get to another pair in terms of territory?
So we work on around about 1 kilometre apart. In some places they will be down to slightly less, but normally there's a feature between them so they can sort of pretend that they're not near another pair. So it might be, you know, a big one side of a hill to another side of a hill or something, but generally around about 1 kilometre apart.
Right. Would that change if there was other raptors in the area, like buzzards or anything else?
No, they don't generally care. One of the nests near where we're going, you know, there's traditionally a goshawk site, and then 100 metres away a buzzard site, and another 100 metres the other side a buzzard site, and then about 150 metres was a raven site as well. So they generally all get on. The thing is that if the goss does get annoyed or there's something about them, then she, normally the female, will deal with that situation. So in this site, for years and years and years, as long as I can remember, the buzzards and the goss have got on okay. And then a year or so ago, she decided in 3 weeks to kill 3 buzzards. And now there's still buzzards there, so, you know, there's enough buzzards to go around.
I wonder what the buzzards did to Naga so much.
Yeah, yeah. They obviously took her food or something. Yeah. She, or was just in a bad period of her life.
That was good.
That's better.
I'll edit that in.
So we're just underneath nest number 2, and we're just asking Gareth, really interesting to find out what the birds are eating. So yeah, what have you found out?
So around about 60% of their diet is grey squirrel down here, and then things like corvids. So we've seen today something like a rook or a crowfoot, and we just found another one at this site as well. Pigeons, and the male often brings thrushes as well, because thrushes, particularly when she's on eggs and stuff and trying to keep up and things, thrushes fairly easy to catch. There's lots and lots of thrushes in here. You can hear them calling and mimicking all the time. So it's a useful meal for him to bring, and not too big or anything for them. Occasionally, something like coots, occasional ducks as well, but very, very occasionally. Most of their diet's going to be squirrels, corvids, thrushes early on.
And interesting that we heard a song thrush mimicking a goshawk last night as well.
Yeah.
You know, so mimicking the... Oh, there's... So Dan's up the tree.
Talking to the birds at the moment, just setting them down. Just, obviously, he's up there now, but we always just, as the climber approaches, just to talk, just to let them know so that they're not too alarmed. They can hear things, but then they say, oh, okay, you know.
Fantastic. They'll be on their way down soon, and then we could talk maybe a little bit about the ringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she might be. Well, actually, keep her like that for the moment.
Yeah, but just
measuring the wing now.
Yeah, so what we're doing is, obviously we have a wing ruler, and what we're doing is we're measuring the wing, if she allows me to do that, which is 163. 163 ones. So that will tell us what age that
is.
So they're about 23, 24 days old, somewhere like that.
So about 5 days older than the birds on the last nest.
Yeah.
But she's significantly bigger, isn't she?
Yeah, she's big.
So we should always do the metal ring first on birds generally, because if you're doing ringing from mist net or anything, then if the bird flies off,
you want that one.
You've got the ring.
At least you've got that ring on.
Yeah. So, left leg.
Yeah, metal left.
That's right. No, that's me. It's me. I'm checking that it is the right leg. Where's the leg?
It's a one-legged goat. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
There we are.
Okay. So you look at talons. Those talons there.
Yeah.
So this is, say, the killing claw. So that's the one that's going like that into something.
Yeah.
And this is the metal ring going on.
I'm going to hear the grinding noise. All together. So make a D shape, and then what we're doing is flattening the D shape.
The fluffy bum.
Helps.
So this is a Darvik ring.
Yeah, so this is a yellow Darvik, which just means that when we put cameras on the nests, then we can see the ring easier than a metal ring. So she's quite a big female. I think we said the age of her. And you can see, say, on the claws on this is just incredible.
Yeah.
Hind claw, which at the moment, you know, if she's got prey, she will be able to rip it up. But in a few weeks' time, she'll be using that to dispatch squirrels. You know, so much bigger than a male as well. So.
Yeah. So here we are now at one of Gareth's peregrine watch sites. We've found lots of prey, lots of dead stuff that's been pulled apart. We've had a flyby from the peregrine, and we're now just hanging out. And I thought it would be an opportunity to ask Gareth how he got into all of this in the first place.
When I was really young, you know, I think I saw every rare bird possible in my back garden. And spent holidays in different wine regions around Europe. So I went to the Pyrenees and saw griffon vultures and Benelli's eagle and things like that. But also just going out for walks with my dad along the local river to watch the water voles and occasionally see a kingfisher, not often then. And that was when I was, you know, happiest, if you like. But my other passion was football. And so that took up a lot of my life, and there wasn't much time for nature other than holidays, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I got older and I realised that, as I said to you, that I wasn't going to play for Newcastle United anymore, my knees were like Alan Shearer's when he retired, that I just couldn't do it anymore. And so I came back, I had a house in Stroud and noticed that something was visiting in the garden, so I got a camera and then saw that it was badgers visiting this you know, modern estate, and I could go out walking from there. And so I got more and more back into it. And when I moved into the Forest of Dean 2006, that's when I sort of first reignited my passion and put a trail camera on a local river and met some friends, and they were mixed up with looking for or ringing peregrines and goshawks and things like that, and slowly got into it. First started with nests, and then sort of accidentally went into ringing, really. So it wasn't really what I wanted to do as such, but I went in there because of restricted numbers. You know, I found these nests, I wanted to see them, and I wanted to see them closely.
Yeah.
And so it was a way of doing that.
Yeah, brilliant. And you also ring peregrines, and I understand from what you told me earlier that ringing peregrines at a nest is a different kettle of fish to goshawks.
Yeah, peregrines are quite... There's a few things with peregrines that makes them different to goshawks. As you saw when we were ringing the goshawks, they're fairly compliant. On the whole, they just sit there, whereas peregrines are quite noisy, quite vocal, and they're very popular as well. So you're often ringing them in places where members of the public often are,
yeah,
and they're very curious and things. So I know that the first time that Ed Druitt rang his peregrines, he had a TV camera in front of him, and the first time I rang mine, I had a TV style camera in front of me, and I was in a room where the light kept on going on and off and people watching and things. So they tend to be more stressful when you're doing them. And it's one of the things, same with you, that peregrine meant so much to you as a young person, and it's the same for me, in that was the bird, that was the one that you wanted to see, really. And and so I guess that when you ring them, you have that with you, I guess.
Yeah. What was it for you with peregrines? Where did you get that passion from?
I think their speed.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, when you go into a wood or when you go into a quarry or something and you hear them call, there's that call that just does something to you. And then just seeing them, you know, diving at something or just flying or something, they just look awesome. And it's just, I think, that boyhood thing of wanting fast, isn't it? It's a fast car, a fast bike, a fast boat, you know, a fast plane, and now you've got a fast bird.
The fastest bird.
Yeah.
I think I could relate to that in the fact that I went for the cheetah, the fastest animal, you know, and like Ferraris, loved them, you know, it is actually, does become a little bit like that. As a kid, birds of prey were the coolest, you know, so I can relate to the fact that, you know, you do tend to migrate to these sort of things with the, because they're impressive. I think impressive birds, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that also, if you go through a dinosaur phase or something, you're not really looking for the plant eaters.
No, T-Rex, you know, straight away, isn't it?
You're looking for something that kills something.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the thing. And maybe as you get older, you start appreciating things more. Now I'm looking at tree pipits and thinking, well, they're an interesting bird, you know, and trying not to look of every small bird as a bit of prey for either a goshawk or, a hobby or a kestrel or a peregrine.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it'll be nice to put this podcast out after Spring Watch this year, when there's been horrific scenes from the peregrine nest on Spring Watch. And if you haven't seen it, it is online and you can go and find it on iPlayer. But there's some not very nice stuff that the peregrines were part of. But yeah, awesome birds. If occasionally one goes a little bit rogue and does something nasty, it's not all of them. There's bad ones everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're the minority.
I think there's that thing of them being on camera now, in that, you know, people find out what blue tits are like or great tits are like because they have a camera, you know, in their nest box and stuff, and they see, you know, one of them hoiking out one of the youngsters,
yeah,
you know, and things yeah. like that.
In the same, so kind, it, of
the same
yeah.
kind of manner.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that with now with peregrines with cameras, you can actually see what they're yeah. like and see. And ultimately, it's, you know, there's probably something wrong with a chick, or there's, you know, there's something about it
yeah.
that they detect, and maybe yeah. we don't. And maybe we like an underdog, but in nature, they don't like an underdog.
Yeah. My daughter's take on it was that the mother, the female, had told the dad that the daughter was being really annoying and he just took it too far.
It had one too many super tenants or something, do you think?
Yeah. Came in off the lash and he was just like, right, I've had enough of you.
Who's been messing about, right? I'll have your leg. And then your mum will deal with it.
Yeah, she'll come and clear up the mess. Oh, dear. But, yeah, brilliant birds.
Gareth's got to do his top five as well.
It's goshawk, you know, all the way.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Wood pigeon, I think. Oh. It's got to have wood pigeon for the bait for the yeah. for your goshawk and your peregrine, yeah. haven't you?
Just really? As keen to see them.
Yeah. Well, not keen to see them. No. Keen to, sort of keen to see them. Yeah.
So in your top five birds, let me get this straight. In your top five birds, you would have wood pigeon purely for bait.
Yeah, for prey, isn't it? I mean, you know, peregrine or a goshawk can't survive without food, can they? So you've got to think about these things. You
yeah,
can't
just, that's true.
Actually, your fascination with the song thrush and it and its mimicking is quite a yeah. nice relationship, isn't it? With
yeah.
The goss, if you...
Yeah.
Song thrush has been a bit of a theme on this trip, you know, since last night when we were so out many. On the... Yeah, they were everywhere and doing the goss and the buzzard mimicry, and being a prey item for a goss as well is a...
Yeah. Yeah, they're a lovely bird. Both song thrush and missel thrush are lovely birds, aren't they?
Yeah.
Beautiful looking. Say, certainly we use them when we're going into new woods, listening to see what's in the wood and things.
Yeah.
So useful.
Yeah. It's amazing. I do think as well, and this is going to be unpopular with you, Will. Mm-hmm. But I don't get yeah. Brace yourself for this. I don't get nightingales, as you know, up north. And then I do hear people posting about them and stuff like that. And then I listen to them and I go, yeah, it's nice. Mm. It's nice, but is it nicer than a song thrush? Is it nicer than a blackbird?
I was thinking that last night when all the... Well, then when you got that kind of dusk and all the song thrush belting yeah. out and each one's different. And I was thinking, this is just as good. I must admit.
Yeah.
It was like having a light when you... I don't know, you're in Sussex or something and you're along a hedgerow.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's about... four or five nightingales is brilliant, and if you're lucky one pops out. But it was the same last night with that prelude to the nightjar, that you know, there was, you know, four or five of them singing and each one was different as we went along. Mm. And beautiful song, and you didn't miss them or wasn't craving anything more.
Yeah,
they did it all.
It's that thing that I find myself replicating what they're doing and then thinking, oh yeah, that's a tawny. Well, what's that? That's Star Wars. Where's that come from? You know, and that type of thing, isn't it? Just thinking, well, what's it replicating now? Where's it got that from? And obviously, I know other birds do it, but certainly song thrushes do it a lot.
Yeah.
And that repeat they do, that kind of, it's the same bit, isn't it?
Mm.
Twice or so, and then and again, and then
yeah.
that's the way. Perhaps I'll stick in my next bird guide, but I want, you know, when you break down song, like the blackbird song is always different, isn't it? But the song thrush has this repetitive side to it, which is how you kind of
these phrases
it if you're new to it all.
Can you hear the ravens, young ravens out the back there?
Yeah, we've seen quite a few ravens.
Yeah, they're doing well now, really well around here. And you've got obviously a mixture of sheep in the forest itself and a lot of farmland that has sheep as well, so that always seems to go down well with ravens. But incredible birds and massively intelligent.
Intelligent,
things.
Yeah.
I used to visit a goss site near where we've just been. I used to drive down the road and the raven would see my car, come and collect my car, and then follow me all along the road until I went out, and then stop and wait for me to come back and then follow me all the way along the road again. It's like, I'm just seeing you in, I'm just seeing you out. You know.
So that was our third and final goshawk nest of the trip. It's been absolutely brilliant, hasn't it, Will?
Absolutely unbelievable. It's to get that. Actually, I did that again without thinking about it. But so to get so close to those birds is stunning.
It's an absolute privilege, isn't it, to be that close to such a magnificent creature. Second best bird in the world. But that was the third nest we did this weekend, wasn't it? And you say it's not been a great year for goss.
No, we've got I think we've got about 50% failures this year, which is extraordinary. Right. It's Rob's been ringing them since 2001 and monitoring them since the 80s, and I think he says that's the worst year that he's ever known for really? In terms of failure. So yeah, we guess it's the weather, it's the rain. But, you know, we've had reasonable numbers. The chicks today were big, the females were pretty big, pretty strong, powerful. So yesterday they were pretty big. It seems to be a female bias on the ones we've done. But
yeah, I think of the seven birds that we saw ringed, two males, five ladies.
Yeah.
And all looked in top conditions from what I could tell.
Yeah. Have we mentioned about their beautiful blue eyes, like when they're young? I don't know if you've said that, but like I'm still thinking about it, like how
it's like a slate grey blue, isn't it? It's amazing.
Yeah, blue grey. Yeah,
beautiful colour.
And they'll start to turn orange, probably in about 9 months' time or so, something like that. So, well, probably slightly earlier, and then they become orange, and they get darker and darker as they get older.
Right.
And you can get them almost like a blood red.
Yeah.
When they get to be old in the right light.
And how old will these birds that we've seen? So they're 25, 24, 25 days old, most of the ones we've seen this weekend. And if they have a good innings?
Well, a good innings is probably 9 years, but an exceptional innings. We've had, I think we have about three or four of the longevity records, and they're about 18 years, 17 years, 18 years.
Yeah.
But that's exceptional. That's, you know... remarkable. And unfortunately two of those were shot, so think that they've lived all that time and they couldn't die gracefully, really.
It's amazing. I mean, one of the things that struck me, I don't know about you, Will, but you know, being so close to these animals that, you know, they're going back up their tree, down the climber, you know, carefully deposited them back, well, brought them down and then took them back up. But you know, they've been ringed and handled by the experts in the group, and to think that they'll not be touched again by another human being, and they're going to be so wild and so wild. I mean, there's not many wilder birds than raptors generally, but you know, especially goshawks when they're so secretive and amazing.
It is one of those things where, you know, you hope you never have to touch one of those. And I think one of those 17-year-old birds, when I saw it was ringed and put that in, and you're holding it just thinking, just incredible bird. And you know, some of them go through so much to do that. Yeah, but they're incredible birds. You know, I think that Gloucestershire should rename their cricket team from Gloucester Gladiators to Gloucester Goshawks. I think that should be the best thing. But
that would be definitely appropriate. Mm. And how long's your monitoring group been going running for now?
So the monitoring group was formed out of the, I think it was 2013 or 14 peregrine study. Basically, we brought together what we call Rob Husbands. So Yoda came and brought us all together. And with Edgeret, they've trained most of us now. And so we've got a 50-50 balance with males and females. Just got to get a few more younger ringers in, I think.
Yeah.
Particularly with me and Rob trying to get the average age down. But
succession planning.
Yeah. Well, especially for Rob. Rob's saying he wants to do more pipits rather than goshawks nowadays.
Why would you want to do that, though? I guess he's done his goshawk time, hasn't he? Legendary status, you know, well and truly sort of protected, I suppose.
A tree pipit is a fine bird, but, you know, come on.
Yeah, they're an interesting bird. Yeah. But, I mean, between him and Jerry Lewis is run goshawks since 1979. I think it was the first one in Gloucestershire.
Right.
And so they've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of goshawks, you know.
Yeah.
So he doesn't mind being at the bottom, but he certainly doesn't want to climb anymore. And he certainly, he wants to spend his time with his little brown jobs, really.
Oh, brilliant. Well, it's amazing work that you're doing and incredible to see it firsthand, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
For novices like us, and it makes me want to learn to be a ringer.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Or to get better at climbing trees.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Gareth. It's been, like I say, it's been an absolute pleasure and a and a privilege really to come and get so close to these birds and see what you guys do. It's amazing. Thank you.
That's okay. That's okay. It's been a really lovely weekend, and you know, obviously, I prefer peregrines really, but, but I can't say that. So I'm going to have to say something like, you know, seeing the king of the forest. I guess that maybe the peregrine's king of the sky, maybe Goshawk's king of the forest.
Absolutely, I'll take that.
Yeah.